the What Bitcoin Did podcast.
Hi there, how are you all doing? Welcome to the What Bitcoin Did podcast brought to you by Kraken. And next up for my Lightning Month, I've got an interview with Sergey Kotlyar from Bitrefill to discuss how they are using Lightning in a retail environment. But before that, I've got a message from my show sponsors. So first up, I'm going to talk to you about Kraken again, my big lead sponsor, and how I am now an active user of the platform. So I mentioned previously that at the end of each month when I'm balancing the books for my podcast, because I've got people I've got to pay me, a lot of this is now done in Bitcoin. It just makes a lot more sense. I've got customers who are international and I've got people I work with who are international. So it's usually just a bit easier to pay people with Bitcoin. And previously I'd been using Coinbase, but since Kraken have become a sponsor, I said I would try it out. I'd give it a go and see how it was. And I'd previously submitted my KYC and I was approved to level 3 in under 2 hours, which was a really great start. That was really cool. And yeah, I'm using the platform and it's pretty cool. No problems. If I'm to give an honest assessment, I'm looking forward to the design and UX upgrades that are coming, because I know there's some coming. I can't give you any dates, but I've spoken to the team. They've got lots of cool new updates coming. You've probably seen a bunch of news, or you've heard me talk about all the things they're doing. So this is definitely something they've worked on. But yeah, it was super easy. When I had to buy some Bitcoin, I just created an order. When I had to sell some Bitcoin, I just did a market order. And the coolest thing was when I actually went to transfer it back to my bank account. I can't even tell you how quick it was, because I didn't even think of timing it. I put it in, went and checked my bank account a few hours later, and I think it was there. So that was very, very cool. But I am looking forward to the design updates that are coming. I am happy to be using Kraken now, and I'm really proud to be working with them on the podcast. So what about you? Are you using Kraken? What exchanges are you using? I'd love to hear from you. I want to know more about this. So please get in touch. Let me know what you think. And if you haven't been to Kraken for a while and you're interested in checking them out and becoming part of this, head over to kraken.com, which is kraken.com. And also, let's talk about BlockFi. You know them. They've been sponsoring the podcast for ages. And in a recent interview with Zach, he said he's going to carry on for a while, so that was pretty cool. Love working with them, really open-minded, they're really transparent, and with everything that's been discussed around their interest accounts, Zach came to me with the idea of just doing an open interview with me. He said, look, I'll open the floor, anyone's got any questions, they can submit them. So we did it. Earlier this week, we got on the phone, I put all the questions that are sent to me to Zach, and I've uploaded that to SoundCloud. So if you want to listen to him answer questions about rehypothecation, insurance, and how the interest accounts work, then just head over to my SoundCloud page, which is soundcloud.com/what-bitcoin-did. And if you're interested in finding out more about these interest accounts, then head over to blockfi.com, which is blockfi.com. Okay, so on to my interview with Sergey. And I wanted to find out a bit more from a company who actively been using Lightning in a retail environment. I wanted to see about the challenges and difficulties they face doing this. And I'm a big fan of Sergey, and I'm a big fan of Bitrefill. And look, for full transparency, they have been a sponsor of the podcast, and John Carvalho's been on before. But I wanted to speak to them because I like their product. I used it. I tested it out. I bought a voucher for my son, and it was super cool. They use this. They use zero confirmations as well for some customers, which I was able to use, which meant I got my voucher, which I ordered for my son's PlayStation, immediately. So look, I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan because they are trying different things, or they're always looking to adopt new technology. And Sergey explained to me that they've just been willing to play with this. And what is obvious and cool is that whilst they're running a business, they're also Bitcoiners and they want to support the ecosystem. They want Bitcoin to grow and they're willing to test things out and ship and support Bitcoin. So yes, more than happy to talk to Sergey. It was great to get him on. We talked about the challenges of accepting crypto in retail, why they use zero confirmations, why that might not be for everyone, what the challenges they face with Lightning, and some of his thoughts on custodial v non-custodial wallets, which is something that came up in my conversation with Jack Mallard. So definitely interesting. As ever, I'd love your feedback. And if you're enjoying the podcast, you want to support what I do, please head over to my website, which is whatbitcoindid.com. Click on the support section. Even if you just go onto iTunes and leave me a review, that's super helpful. But if you like the show and you want to support it, please do that. And I also want to give a big shout out to my top tier patron, Rise Wallet. Have you checked them out yet? A very, very cool product. It is a new way to buy into Bitcoin. No sign-ups. You just scan your card and you are holding Bitcoin. Check that out at risewallet.com. Okay, so I hope you enjoyed the interview. As ever, if you've got any feedback, feel free to get in touch. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com.
You're doing a great job at getting the people to speak. You're doing 100% the right thing. I would like the other opinion to come out, but maybe this is my chance. So,
well, yeah, here we are. You've got a chance to speak. Obviously, you know I'm doing a Lightning month, so.
But But there is like there is an interesting aspect around the Lightning is that the same people that they say things that Bitcoin is a store of value are the same people that are excited about Lightning, which is very contradictory, right?
Well, yeah, it is and it isn't. Yeah, this is one of the problems I run into doing this is that there are so many strong, opinionated people with contradictory opinions. And trying to get to a single truth is very hard. But one of the things I'm kind of getting to myself personally is actually, I only really care about what I want to use Bitcoin for and Lightning for. So right now, I use Bitcoin and I do use it as a store of value. I hold value. But I do use it also to pay people. All people pay me. You know, I've issued invoices to some people in Bitcoin, which is useful. It's much better than bank payments. And I also am starting to think how I would use Lightning, but I don't have a huge use for Lightning right now. I guess less so outbound, more inbound. Like if somebody wants to send me a tip or subscribe, I have a use for Lightning, but I don't have an outbound use for it just yet.
Well, maybe we can provide one for you over time. I remember you bought the gift card for your daughter, I think.
No, my son. My son. I did. But I guess it's more of that was a novelty to try out what you were doing before I interviewed John. But for Lightning, I think my main problem with using Lightning at the moment is a UX thing rather than a desire for the technology. But great to have you on, man. Thank you for coming on. I've wanted to talk to you for a while. You've obviously got a long, rich history in Bitcoin. You've got a very well-respected business. You now employ one of my favorite people in Bitcoin, which is John, who I think's amazing. But it's great to talk to you. I think just to set it up for everyone, it would be good for you just to give... You don't need to do a full backstory, but just let people know who you are. And I think more important, tell people about who BitRefill are, because not everybody who listens to this will know BitRefill.
So my name is Sergey Kotler. I'm the CEO and founder of BitRefill. What we do is we try to make internet money useful for buying things in the real world. We want to bring about that vision of cryptocurrency, of Bitcoin, of billions of people paying each other and getting paid with these coins. And so concretely, like what we do, and I think what makes us a bit different from many other companies is that we start from the customers. Rather than like in the past, a lot of has started from merchants. We start from the customers and say like, okay, but what is it that we can help the customers achieve with their coins today? And so like on that path, we started 4 years ago now doing phone refills all over the world. So in most countries of the world, it's still the case that like BitRefill is the only thing that you can buy with your coins. And then gradually, since a year or so, we've been doing more and more gift cards, which feels more to a Western audience. And we do a lot of Lightning stuff. We don't actually build our own Lightning implementation or anything like that. But sort of the analogy I tend to make is that we don't build a motorcycle that is Lightning, but we're really good at riding it. and we know everything about it and tuning it and tweaking it and so on. And we're building for a vision where there's a billion people or even 7 billion people living and using their coins every day.
Yeah, so that's one of the things I noticed. Also with obviously your tagline, living on Bitcoin, is it? Remind me what the tagline is.
We had some different ones. Yeah, we've had living on Bitcoin. We've had one live on crypto. We've had playing around with the internet money concept, which is sort of very value neutral and doesn't bring up what's a coin and so on. But I mean, the red thread of it all, and we're all mostly passionate about Bitcoin. But
yeah, and I what I can see though with the vision for you is, or what excites you is, I think a lot of us when we are using crypto or Bitcoin, we've always got the kind of price of our local currency in the back of my mind. So you know, if I buy something with Bitcoin, I'm still thinking, well, what does that cost me in pounds? That costs me probably, say, £20-25. And I'm like, okay, I get that. I do the conversion. And then sometimes when we travel, you know, if I go to somewhere like Thailand, I have to have my calculator ready to do the conversion. Not so much in the States. I'm kind of getting used to that. I guess you're looking forward to a vision where people just start using Bitcoin and they're not really thinking about the conversion. It's almost Bitcoin becomes its own kind of ecosystem and people aren't worried about going in and out of fiat, right?
Right. Well, the conversion question, that's the unit of account, sort of, which is the one thing we can all agree that we haven't reached yet. Like, eventually, I think it will happen. Like, there are slight tendencies of that. So, for example, I would argue that the number one thing that people buy with their coins today is buying other coins. And other coins are priced in Bitcoin a lot of the time, mm-hmm. right? I was just checking the other day. I was checking Veriblock and reading up at that. And I know that one Veriblock coin is worth 1,800 Satoshi. So that's my reference point. Like, I don't know how many dollars it is. I know that it's 1,800 Satoshis. It is gradually evolving, all of that stuff. It's just that it's like from starting from a very low low level. And I think that we will eventually get there, but it's as always with this stuff, it's not going to be the Westerner customers first. It's going to be in a different order of things. And I'm pretty sure that, you know, everybody brings up Venezuela, but yeah, I'm pretty sure that there's pretty good grasp of, among the Bitcoiners at least, what the value of a Bitcoin is, and that they don't need to do the recalculations and so on.
Yeah. So also, whilst you're a Bitcoiner yourself and predominantly a Bitcoin company, you are also accepting altcoins. I mean, I guess if people want to buy things with altcoins and sell them to you and you can dump them, you're kind of coin agnostic there.
Well, yeah. I mean, if people come to us and want to buy stuff, then that's great, right? And I mean, for a long time, we were Bitcoin only. And then during the whole fee crisis of late 17, we kind of had to do a bunch of different things. And one of those things was that we went from just Bitcoin and we added Litecoin and Dash. And eventually we even went to Dogecoin. And we tried to reach broadly. I think if we zoom out of, from the rest of the world, like we here, we can discuss like, oh, what's Bitcoin, what's Ethereum? Oh, those guys, they don't understand and proof of stake, blah, blah, blah. But like outside world, they just see this as Bitcoiners fighting about Bitcoin things, right? And at the end of the day, I think that what unites all of the different coins is a vision of sort of a free internet money, free as in speech, sort of that is available to everybody to use, and it's convenient and censorship resistant and so on, right? And then there's like these little schisms and differences and so on, and gets very political around that.
And so what are the main challenges that you face as a business trying to build a retail operation using crypto?
I think the biggest challenge is that the crypto world has evolved in a super uneven way. It's sort of like teenager hits puberty and like the ears grow faster than the nose or whatever, you know, but this is like extreme. So we have the speculative use case, whatever it is, like has so trumped everything else, right? Like if you look at the speculative market of crypto, it's in the tens of millions. But if you look at the people that are using the coins in the sense of earning them somehow, of paying for things or paying people and so on, that number is a lot smaller. Right. And so it's sometimes tricky to navigate because we're trying to build this thing. And I think everybody agrees that this is important and that this is where it's going to land eventually. Yeah. But it's also a little bit tricky when there's like these periodically huge things that pop up and sort of distort the conversation. And someone shows up and does a huge ICO that does something similar to us. And then they, you know, spread a bunch of money around. And then a year later, they run out of money, they disappear, and then we have to sort of react to all of those things. It's a very uneven market, and I mean, the technical issues, as you've discussed in the past episodes, like there is a lot of UX things that need to be a lot better. We're still super early days, so there's so much stuff to do.
But what about actually handling crypto? So one of the things that I imagine might be quite difficult is you price with the local currency as the unit of account, but you mm-hmm. can pay in Bitcoin. But, you know, what happens if, say, I buy something from you for, say, $20, and do you zero confirmations, right?
Yeah, we can discuss that as well if you want.
Yeah, so I'll come to that. But so you do zero confirmations. What happens, say, in that hour if there's a 20% price fall? What happens? So are you out of pocket there?
But here's the thing. Over time, Bitcoin goes up more than it goes down. And this is what makes the Bitcoin companies different from non-Bitcoin companies, that we understand that. for us, and especially like with the phone refills, where we actually have a bunch of currencies in all kinds of different countries, like Bitcoin is not one of our big problem currencies. We've held stock in things like Nigerian Nairas and so on. Like that's more like there you can talk about some volatility. But so to answer your question, like yeah, we take exposure. We keep a good chunk of our capital in Bitcoin. And we have it on the balance sheet as we have 9 or 10 currencies, both fiat and cryptos. So yeah, sometimes it goes up, sometimes it goes down. There will definitely be cases where we'll have lost on some orders, but since the orders come in at a relatively even trickle over time, we benefit more than we get hit by it. And we've kind of learned to navigate and surf this ultra volatile environment.
Right. Okay. And do you, like, how often do you cash out? Are you cashing out instantly, as in you receive it, or on a daily basis? I mean, how do you tend to play this?
Yeah, we have so many different products and suppliers, and so the answer to all these questions is it depends. But usually, we don't like. There's not an immediate sell when you buy something from us. The sell will happen at a random time when our CFO, head of treasury, decides that now it's time to fill up some balance somewhere.
You have a treasury process for managing this.
Yeah, and we keep like a stock for a lot of things, like an inventory. Yeah, so when the stocks run low, we refill them.
So the zero confirmations was very cool because obviously I wanted to try it out, and I bought a voucher for my son, and it came straight away, and I was like, what? Hold on, what? How did this happen? And then I hadn't read the terms or anything, and then I realized that it was zero confirmations, and I guess you've done a risk reward for this. You've looked at it and thought, well, how often do payments not confirm, right?
Right. Yeah, almost never. I'll say actually never. You have to be aware. It's so funny that people go around and say that it's impossible to do unconfirmed. And here we've done it for 4 years with we've had a lot of problems, and that ain't one in our company. And because it also has to do with the kind of transactions that we do and so on. Like it's relatively low value. We have a decent margin. So if someone says that, hey, I can defeat Bitrefill's algorithm 2% of the time. Yeah, but we have maybe 4% margin on that product. I say, hey, knock yourself out, have fun, right? But the truth is that, and we don't just accept any transaction unconfirmed. Like there is a secret sauce here to how we check them, and if it's a sort of a regular transaction from a regular wallet and so on, then yeah, it's relatively safe to process them. I mean, I can give you, I guess, and it's a trust model, right? This is a different trust model than that of Bitcoin. You have to be very aware of that. So we trust in a lot of things. We trust in, to some extent, the miners and the nodes to be running in a certain way. We trust in that the wallet that the person is sending from. Concrete example, like if we pick up that a transaction is coming from Coinbase and it's a purchase for a $20 gift card, like, what are the odds that they're going to be double spending us? Right? And now people are like, they're going to be screaming and complaining about that. But the reality is that most customers, here's something people don't understand, that the people that we discussed all this stuff with on Twitter, and I'm active on Twitter as well, and so are a lot of our team members. But the users on Bitrefill are to a very large extent different from the ones that you have on Twitter. They don't know about unconfirmed. They don't participate in this conversation. So when a transaction comes in, when they make a payment, they expect it. And we've had the periods where, for different reasons, we had to tweak the algorithms, or we have to turn it off or something, and people will complain because their expectation is to get the thing right away. And so that's, I guess, like how we do it. Like I've considered to put out a proper challenge for people to try and double spend us. It still hasn't happened. It's absolutely that it could happen at some point. It is possible. But yeah, the risk and reward is like it's not even close to compare.
Right. So what do you think of most people with Bitcoin using the standard 6 confirmations then? Do you think there's a little more flexibility for people to maybe move lower? Or do you think that's not something that we should be discussing and it's too risky?
Bitcoin, again, everybody has to do their own thing. If you're an exchange and you accept unconfirmed and let people withdraw, for example, and you get beaten 2% of the time, then you're broke. Your company's dead, right? So it's different. They have a different security model than we do. So I'm not saying that just because we can do it, that everybody can do it. Yeah, and you have to be aware that like Bitcoin is a lot of things for a lot of people, entities, companies, and people will use it differently. So I'm not going around saying that others should be using our stuff or doing things the way that we're doing them. I don't know. Like there's so many different variables in this stuff, and I can't give a general recommendation, but it's absolutely feasible for accepting payments, or you know, like the usual case of like if your buddy is paying you back for a cup of coffee, like do you need to hold your buddy by the hand until it confirms six times, or are you going to accept that your buddy is not going to run the double spend script on the side? Right, it's a simplistic example.
And just another question before we start talking a little bit more about Lightning. Why do you think there has been so little merchant adoption, or merchants have adopted and then kind of rolled back?
There was a ton of merchant adoption. and the problem was that there wasn't customer adoption. and it's as simple as that. Like all of the technical issues, there, and it's not that like there weren't, but end of the day, had there been millions of people using it, then the technical issues would have been ironed out or worked around and so on. And I know because we did a lot of that working around for us. And so you can only imagine for like a big company like Steam, you know, how many it should have been and like what lengths they should have been going to, but they didn't, because the level of customer adoption is not at that level yet. That's why something like our service, which starts from the consumer and can serve service the sort of active community of cryptocurrency people, which is a lot smaller, and it doesn't require the merchant to go through all of these different hoops and processes. And like the conversation that you and I just had about Ten Confirmed, like try to explain that to a merchant, and you have to, like you can't. That's the thing. Like something like BitPay can never sort of. There's still always going to be stuff that the merchant needs to do, and so that's where we start from the customer. And yeah, and because we have the extra step of you need to redeem the gift card and that, which is slightly annoying, but on the other hand, you get a lot fewer errors because we control the experience. That makes sense?
Yeah, it does. But I guess this therefore comes down to, you know, there's times I could have bought for things in Bitcoin, but I'm like, I want to hodl my Bitcoin.
Sure.
I don't want to spend it. So we have that kind of challenge of, I think you alluded to it, of a store of value versus a medium of exchange. You know, if it's a store of value right now, the primary use case, sometimes people are scared of spending it because they don't want to lose value. And also then add into that, there is a potential that Lightning could be a bit of an anticlimax because people still don't really want to spend their Bitcoin.
So here's the thing, like it's not one thing. Again, it's one thing to you, right?
Yep.
You don't want to, in your mental calculation, you have your regular money, you have your credit card, and you have some Bitcoins. And you're like, you know, I'm going to hold all my Bitcoins. That makes sense for you right now, right? There are other people right now for whom there's a different calculation, right? There's people whose income is in Bitcoin and they want to buy food, very simply, right? And for them, it becomes, this whole thing is going to be irrelevant. And that's what I mean by that, like, the transactional use is a lot smaller than the store of value use today. Like, there's no arguing about that. But it's not that it's just one thing. It's all of these things are developing, and they're developing at their own different paces. And there's even the situation of like, imagine Bitcoin went to 50,000 tomorrow. I bet you were going to buy some stuff.
Well, but I'm probably just going to sell quickly as possible, sell some Bitcoin on an exchange, and then
maybe or you buy something really nice for your kids. I don't know, like someone else might, right? And so then the only thing. That needs to change, that in your mental calculation right now, your perspective is, well, relative to my wealth, I have less or as many Bitcoins as I would like to have. But then suddenly, boom, Bitcoin moves. And now I have a little bit too much Bitcoin. Maybe I should spend my Bitcoins to keep some of my regular money. Right. And so there is this dynamic that is going on, I think. And like what we look for is people with coins to spend. Yeah. Right. I'm not going to go around. I know some companies are doing it, try to convert hodlers to to spenders or whatever. Like, I think all that stuff is super cheesy.
Yeah.
Like, let people do whatever you want. Like, you can't moralize people into doing things. Yeah, there is enough people today that are looking to buy stuff with their coins to make a business out of it. That number is growing super fast, and there will come a day when all of these millions are going to get show up in that category, and that's what we're building.
Right, so let's talk a bit more about Lightning, because obviously this is a Lightning month.
Mm-hmm.
So you were very early in adopting it, back even before there was really wallets, right? Back in March of last year, so essentially a year ago.
Longer than that, even. I think we did it like we were on testnet even in the summer of 17.
So what does Lightning mean for you? Does it offer an improvement of a service, or is it essentially just another option for payment?
Well, yes and yes. Like, yeah, I mean, Lightning is a technical feature. Like, I think in the end game, people will not know. Like, when we hit the point where we have billions of users, they will not know what Lightning is. This is my guess. They will just be buying stuff with Bitcoin. So in some sense, yeah, it is a technical feature that suddenly like has gotten all this traction behind it for a lot of it is historical reason. From my perspective, it's always been known that something like this is needed. So a little backstory is before I started Bitrefill, so this is like mid 2014, I was in conversation with a Swedish company called Strope that identified back then that, you know, there's going to be a scarcity of transactional space on Bitcoin. There's going to be a huge mess around it, and the solution is going to be building networks of payment channels. Like, they got up until that, and they started building it. Now, their solution didn't have some of the fancy stuff that Lightning has, the stuff that requires SegWit, and then there's some other opcodes and some other things that didn't exist back then. But like conceptually, like that was already figured out. And it's a long story why it ended up that I didn't join them, but like I've kept contact with them. I kind of like, since already then, knew that something like this is going to show up. And so when Lightning did show up and it had all of this mindshare with developers and so on, it was sort of relative no-brainer to hop on. And at the time, it just so happened, I guess, that we had a summer intern that was Justin Camarena, who was fresh out of college, but spent all of his time reading about Lightning stuff. And we were fiddling around with the nodes and so on. And we were like, let's fire up a testnet Lightning. And because there were these like star blocks and like these pretend stores. And they're like, no, let's make at least a real pretend store so you can go through the real experience, how it actually will be. And so we kind of already started testing in that sense.
Yeah, because I guess with your zero conf's, I've got no reason to use Lightning with you because essentially it's just as quick, unless I've already got a Lightning wallet to hand, which has capacity and...
Right.
There's no reason.
But that's like the steps that it needs to go through to reach adoption. So there's a new S-curve of adoption of inside of Bitcoin. There's another S-curve that is the Lightning S-curve.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning, obviously, it's going to be people that try it out for novelty or because they're interested in the tech. And some people are actually going to be using it. And I think there's already reasons for you to be doing it that way. For one thing, you will be certain that your transaction goes through instantly and without any hiccups. Like our zero conf, it's not perfect. There's a lot of cases where we won't accept your transaction zero conf, and then you'll have to wait for one conf, which can take, depending on when you make your transaction, it can take a long time. Transactions on Bitcoin have fees. It's not unthinkable that one day, and we have fees, because we need to consolidate all of those little coins that we get, you know, 20 bucks here, 50 bucks there. We need to put them together into big ones, and that has a cost as well. And it's not unthinkable. It's in discussion, but like it's not unthinkable that we're going to expose that cost to the customers, to premier the ones that use payment methods that like Lightning that don't have that cost to us.
What are the challenges that you face by adopting Lightning, so that are different from, say, accepting Bitcoin payments?
Right. Well, it's same but different. Like, you know, there's a new node you need, that you need to run, and it's new and unstable and it will break. And it's not as tricky as people will think. Like, there's certain things, there's also like certain security aspects that you need to be aware of running a Lightning node, and how you configure it and so on. And there's been some mishaps where like that has gone wrong for some companies. Yeah, so there's things like that, but on the whole, and then there's the question of channel management, which like we haven't really, like we've only kind of started hitting it a little bit, and that's probably going to be a bigger thing over time. So there's stuff like that, but on the whole, I would say that we already, I would say, ballpark equal amounts of trouble that, from Lightning that we have from something like Ethereum.
Okay.
And the Lightning one is, and the Lightning one is decreasing.
And does it add another level of treasury management? Because essentially you've got your Bitcoin wallets and then you've got your Lightning wallet.
Yeah.
And if you want to convert your Lightning back to fiat, you have to go to Bitcoin to, you get an extra step, right?
There's been some explaining with my non-technical co-founder that does the accounting about what the different things are and what the channel is and so on. It's a little bit, that stuff can be a little bit tricky, I would guess. Understanding that channels have a cost to close and this and that, and how to rebalance them and so on. Like we tend to sort of, address those things as they come. And it's been going relatively well so far. Like we ship things and we sort of ship first, then we figure out what the problems were, and then we fix the problems. And kind of, because very often the problems are not the ones that you thought were going to be the problems. Yeah. And so that's like one of the philosophies that we have here is to ship it now. Even if it's not ready, like if it sort of works, we ship it and then we find out.
So are there any then other challenges with Lightning that you as a retailer face that people wouldn't be aware of?
Well, I mean, there's the whole question of the topography of the network, if you want to talk about that kind of stuff, that people are sort of gradually realizing that, you know, like, not all, like, if I should be the critic here, but like not all nodes on Lightning are equal, for example. Yeah, and it's also the case on Bitcoin in a sense. But yeah, and what I mean by that, like, okay, so imagine we have a channel. Someone wants to open a channel with us. Yeah, that someone could be, I don't know, Yals or some other Pierre Richard that's connecting to a bunch of things. All right, great. There's probably going to be routing on that channel. But what if that channel is, some dude with his Android somewhere that has just opened the channel for the lols? He bought some stuff. Now he has an empty channel. He turned it off. That's capital that we have locked in that channel that we can't easily get out, right? And so there's aspects of that there needs to be, and since Lightning is still in a very, I would say, not even early adopters phase, or maybe early adopters phase, it means that this stuff hasn't crystallized yet, and you can't just open a channel with just about anyone. Because eventually you're going to run out of money, and you need to be somewhat selective about that. Yeah, and this is something that I think is going to start crystallizing itself. So we built this Thor product, which basically is that. Like it's a service where we open a channel to someone. The user in the basic Thor service, the user has no funds on their side, so we have all of the funds, but we have the channel, and we guarantee that we're going to keep it open for at least a month. Right, and that part is important, because without that, then the rational thing for us would have been to close it. So we guarantee that it's going to be open for all, and we charge a fee for that. And those fees, like, it still needs to be figured out a little bit. First, they were too high, and people gave a shit for that. And now we've lowered them, but there's also like certain bottom levels that are like, because we need to make Bitcoin transactions for those, so we can't really go lower than that, and so on. But one of the purposes of creating it was, for example, to create a debate or a discussion about the fact that someone needs to handle the contact between the well-connected parts of the Lightning network and the edge nodes, right? And so there is a role to be filled. I sometimes describe Thor as an ISP, you know, like an internet service provider, that on one end, it connects to within steps, but to this well-connected network of the internet, on the other side goes out to people's apartments. Yeah, right. And for that, the ISP charges a fee. there's something like that in Lightning as well that you kind of need to figure out a little bit. And I think that we've already gotten quite a couple of steps in that process. And like the next iteration is probably going to be like getting these services integrated into wallets, to make sure that this stuff gets set up right away and so on.
Yeah, I guess if someone has a channel open for them by you, it's got to be a channel that's being used quite regularly to justify the fee. Otherwise, it doesn't suit being used for like one or two payments, right? Because otherwise, you might as well just do an on-chain payment.
Right. So who's you in this example?
So say, for example, me. Say I needed to, I don't know, receive a Lightning payment. Say somebody who wants to subscribe to my podcast and they want to do it with a Lightning payment and I open a channel with you. If that's the only payment I receive, or even if it's only like two in a month, I might as well have just done an on-chain payment, right? Because your fees are likely in total going to be higher than the fee I would have paid for an on-chain payment.
Sure.
So channels are only useful if they're being used regularly.
Of course. But I think that this is one of those things that, I mean, this is the same as when Bitcoin was new, people would say things like, but I need to buy the Bitcoins on an exchange, I pay a fee for that. And when I sell them, they need to pay a fee for that. Like, yeah, but that's in the setup phase before things start spinning inside of it. I think we're going to, there was one of your recent podcasts, I think it was Pierre or if it was Jack, I don't remember, who said that all Bitcoins are going to be on Lightning. I'm maybe not as optimistic, but I would say like this. There's going to be cold Bitcoins that are in cold storage, but the hot ones, they're going to be on Lightning. And then suddenly it's going to be just that. And at some point, you're going to get to a point where certain services will probably stop accepting on-chain payments. Because remember also that if you send a tip, if you send a dollar to some other podcast that you like, and you send them a dollar tip, and then you pay the 25 cents maybe transaction fee for the bit, that's already like high for that. But they need to pay 25 to collect the fee as well. And then suddenly there's like a 50% transactional cost that's split evenly, but it sucks for both of you. So eventually it will just start spinning. I think it already has. Like, I think there is already a layer of Bitcoins that is spinning around Lightning, that is used in tipping, that is used by enthusiasts, that is used with us. Like, we've reached a level of if you count transactions, like 6% of our transactions last week came with Lightning. That's not nothing.
No, of course. But I'm just thinking, so for example, how much does it cost to open a channel with you?
So a regular Lightning channel, if you want to do it with the good old-fashioned way, doesn't cost anything. But we've set our node to have certain limits that it can't be smaller than that size. Otherwise, you can't open it. You open it to someone else. If you want to open a Thor channel, where we guarantee that we're going to keep it up and all of that, then that has a cost, and that cost is, there's a fixed cost because it needs to pay for two Bitcoin transactions, and there is a variable cost in of a couple of percent of the value of it.
So about what approximate cost would that be?
So I would say that, like, if I think right now, if you get the biggest one, then it's costs something like 3%, I think, of the amount. If you open a smaller one, it's going to be more because the transaction fee is going to be big part of that, and that drives up. So there is like already incentives for people to like try to open bigger channels and so on.
Yeah, no, of course. But I think the point I was trying to make is that if I was considering opening one with you, what I have to do is actually see if there is the cost benefit of having that channel open with the costs, right? Because Lightning Network is there for faster payments, of course, but also to save cost on transactions. Right. But I've got to have enough transactions going through that I save more than I spend on opening the channel with you.
But okay, let me curse in church some more. You know which kind of wallet doesn't cost anything for making Lightning payments?
Blue Wallet,
for example. Yeah, but if it's a custodial node, then yeah, you don't control your keys. But then you can ride on their channels and so on, and have someone professional that manages it. Now, it's not the Bitcoin we came for, and it's not ideal. But it is there. And I think that too kind of brings up the fact that probably, I don't know if this is a law of nature or not, but like probably it is the case that the more decentralization you want, the sort of more you will need to pay in terms of both money and user experience. That it comes at a cost, right? And I think that's, in some ways, I think it's reasonable that because it is more tricky. It's, by definition, it's easier to do something centralized than decentralized. And so the centralized is going to be.
Next up, I talked to Sergey more about Lightning and retail. But before that, I got a message from my show sponsor, BlockFi. And as I said in the intro, I released my interview with Zach, the one I put together where he answers all your questions relating to their new interest account product, because it's been discussed loads. There's lots of questions flying around and lots of different opinions, and some of it perhaps is a bit misleading. And Zach was like, look, Pete, if people got these questions, he saw people on Twitter asking me, he said, look, get them to send you your questions. I'll get on the phone with you. We can record that and we can put it out. So that's up there now on SoundCloud. If you want to listen to Zach answer questions about rehypothecation, insurance, and how the product works, head over to my SoundCloud page, which is soundcloud.com/what-bitcoin-did. If you've got any more questions about that, give me a shout. And also, look, I'm going to sign up for the interest account. I'm going to put my Bitcoin where my mouth is. I'm going to sign up. I'm going to try it out. If you're thinking of doing it yourself, definitely do your own research. But if you are interested in finding out more, head over to blockfi.com, which is BlockFi.com. And we can discuss custodial versus non-custodial, but I, what I'm saying, it's not a criticism, but I'm just trying to get my head around this. It's like, you know, it's almost like today is like very early. People are playing with it, getting their heads around it. But like longer term, I guess my vision that I, of something I would use, probably something you would share, is that I will have a cold storage wallet and a possibly like a semi-hot wallet for Bitcoin, and then a super hot wallet, which is my Lightning. And I optionally choose to use whichever at the time. And ideally, long-term, a lot of these channels won't close, right? You know, I want to keep my channel open.
Right. I think there won't even be a middle wallet. There will only be the two. I think that, when we get back to this, the way things were, sort of when people would pay each other back for lunch with Bitcoin. And I think it's starting to happen again now with Lightning. And today, like if you're a regular, completely non-technical user, probably the best choice is to use a custodial wallet. Now, over time, me and many others are working actively to make wallets that are not custodial, that don't have these problems, and that solve these difficulties. But out of what we have today, yeah, it might be, unless you enjoy tinkering with the stuff, which I think a lot of the current Lightning adopters do, and that's fine. And like, to me, I think that one of the core principles of Bitcoin is that you can do whatever you want. And as such, I think it's good that people care about the core principles of it. But I also say that, you know, can't moralize for people that take shortcuts, especially when that shortcut means getting something in the hands of people today. Yeah, because that allows you to, it allows you to understand what problems are really there. And I think that has a big value in itself as well.
What are the reasons that you're seeing that people would open a channel with you, say, as opposed to creating their own channel and creating their own capacity? Is it really just for speed?
So you're talking about the Thor service?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. It's so the way the Lightning Network is today is that there is a core that is very well connected. And so what you can do, there's a basic convenience that either you ask someone, you need to email them, they need to get you back, you need to change, it takes a while. Whereas here it's like click, click, yeah, it costs a little bit, but whatever, you got it up right away. So I think there's quite a bit of that going on right now in this initial stage. But then you have to remember also that you want to be connected. Like if your only channel is with someone else's Android, it's going to be offline most of the time. Then what good is it, right? So you want your channel to be connected with someone who's well connected with the rest of the network and that has good liquidity, so they put some money on the line on those nodes. And our node is one of the more well connected. It's been that way since the beginning. And so obviously, like if you can connect to one of the very central ones, then people want to do that. And from our perspective, like we still kind of do that as a service to the community. we don't, like, other than that they see that it's Bitrefill they're connecting to, we don't get so much out of that. And if somebody wants to open to one of the other well-connected nodes, then that's great too.
So these well-connected nodes are also, you know, mega nodes, mega hubs, whatever you want to call them. Do you think these are important then for Lightning?
In what sense?
Well, as you said, if you're just connected to somebody who's got an Android and it's offline, you know, it almost makes sense that most of us have a channel open to one of these larger, more centralized hubs, because with that, we've got a higher chance of our payments going through.
Yeah, what's the question?
So do you believe, therefore, that these mega hubs are important and they're going to be an important component of Lightning? You know, some people I've heard argue that they lead to a little bit more centralization. Is that really a centralization, or is that just like a reality of the success of Lightning?
It's some centralization. It's, again, like, it's a matter of definition. It's not black and white here. There is some. There is obviously there is some trust with the nodes you connect to, right? Because what if they go offline? It's going to be inconvenient for you. So you trust them that they're not going to cause you inconvenience by their incompetence, for example, right? You don't trust that they're going to steal their money, but there's still some trust. Yeah, and so, yeah, like, I don't necessarily think that we're going to see mega hubs in that sense. Yeah, I think we're going to see probably just that some natural bigger hubs are going to emerge. Yeah, I think it's going to be companies like ours. It's going to be some of the custodial services. It's going to be some wallets run hubs, like Async runs one for their users. I think that exchanges, when they start getting on board on the Lightning train in a big way, it's going to be relatively natural that they have those hubs. And then there's always going to be enthusiasts. Like, there's always going to be people that just, hey, I want to run a node and I want to spend time building it and getting it connected. That's kind of what we have. I mean, if you run Electrum, Electrum wallet, you will connect to an Electrum server. And what's that? Someone is running it. Yeah, is that centralization? In a very small way, but but yes, somewhat. You can run your own. And no one's stopping you from running your own. And this is sort of, I think this is the beauty of Bitcoin, is that you can run your own. You can run your own everything. And with Lightning especially, like, you can run your own whatever, mega hub. And there's several companies now that sell, you know, Lightning hubs Lightning servers in a box that you can run at home. They will always be online. They will do all of the right things. And who knows? Maybe that will be the case. And then you will be, that my Lightning node at home is going to be, you know, the one that powers my friends and my family and my neighbors. Maybe. I don't know. We don't know that stuff yet. I would personally think it would be really cool if, like, there was, like, the cypherpunk device. And that, like, a bunch of people have them at home, and, like, oh, I have a friend with a cypherpunk device, and it has all this stuff. It has Lightning, it has Tor, it has the mail service, whatever he wants.
Yeah, it's funny, because I'm almost trying to imagine what it will feel like, you know, 5 years, because obviously we're very early. And I said yesterday when I released my episodes, I think I'm guilty of high expectations and treating Lightning like a finished product, but actually it is very early. And lots of the things that I'm coming into, or the problems I'm having, are things just because it is early. You know, so as an example, when I had the trust chain, I wasn't online when I received my payment. And I was like, what? I thought I was meant to be online. And it turns out my blue wallet is custodial. So I didn't need to be online, right? Which to me was a benefit. But then obviously...
For example, yeah.
Yeah, but then I spoke to Jack Mallers, and he obviously said he thinks these custodial wallets are actually bad. Because it's like leaving your Bitcoin on an exchange. You know, it's not your keys, not your Bitcoin. So then I became really conflicted. But really, what I, you know, in my ideal world, right, just as simple and as dumb as this sounds, say I've got my Ledger or Trezor, I would love to just be able to open it up and send a payment in exactly the same way I can send a Bitcoin payment and not have to worry about channels and capacity and everything. It just all just works without me even thinking about it. Because for me, that would be great UX. But I've started treating it like, oh, Lightning doesn't work properly because this doesn't happen. But really, it almost probably will in a few years, right?
So I actually think that... So it's very clear. Everything that you said is true. And Jack's critique is fair and valid in every way. I actually think that... I don't know if we're already at a point where it could just take off. Like, we speculate here a little bit about and, like, try to imagine, like, when the Snapchat moment comes. Like, when there is some social use case And it's going to be something social in a way that's going to just take off like mad. And just, you know, it's probably going to be teenagers and going to do something that is super unreasonable to all the adults. And this is going to take off like mad, and you're going to have 100 million users. Like, what is that going to look like? And personally, I think that like almost certainly when that happens, there will be people that will be screaming, we're not ready yet. That's kind of been the history of Bitcoin since, I guess, since Satoshi was complaining about the WikiLeaks thing, right? Like, we're not ready yet. Don't bring it. And then someone is going to bring it anyway. And then it is going to be chaotic in that sense. And there is going to be quite a lot. Like, I'm pretty certain that whatever that is, the thing that triggers the Snapchat moment, that like a lot of like the people on Twitter are going to be super upset about that, because it's going to violate some of the cypherpunk principles that Bitcoin has been built around. You know, like maybe it's going to be that they use some custodial functionality, or I don't know. Like it's too early to say, but from my perspective, we kind of found out that the good old-fashioned way of doing Bitcoin doesn't scale. We always knew that, but we also experienced it firsthand, like what that looks like. And so there is like that sentiment in the back of our head. Now that stuff is gone, and it's gone for several different reasons. Lightning is one of them. There's also other things that have solved the scaling issue. But we don't need to go into that. But so I don't know if we're already ready, or if there's a couple of pieces. You know, there's so much exciting technology coming out of the Lightning implementations now with the AMP stuff. There's a lot of cool stuff that is coming, but like I'm pretty certain that when it takes off, there's people are going to say we're not ready yet. Yeah, because it's usually good enough is a lot earlier than what people think that it is.
I pretty much predict that the majority of early use case, if it does blow up, will be through custodial services. I just think the ease of use there for new people to come in and start adopting and using Bitcoin, because it's quite a challenge to set up a node, link your node to your device, open channels, understand what that means, understand what open the channels. I think it's way more complex than people appreciate for the normal user.
Sure, I tend to agree. I still think it's worthwhile for us to work to reduce the level of custodial or centralization and so on in every way.
I don't disagree.
But yeah, probably. I mean, it's already, if you look at status quo, if you disregard Lightning for a second, and if you look at the spiky period around the late 2017, early 2018, during the hype, the bulk of all transactions, what was that? Well, it was someone buying coins on Coinbase, sending them to Poloniex, selling those to Bittrex, sending those to BitMEX, right? And then maybe withdrawing them to a ledger, right? But most of the other steps, it was centralized services, custodial, sending to other centralized services. And and if sort of, I'm not saying that it's good, I'm not advocating it in any way, I'm just observing that's what this activity actually was. Again, and on Twitter, people are arguing that, oh, you know, my Electrum wallet is giving me the wrong fees. Like, yeah, maybe, or I don't know. But that's not like most people, they just use the custodial stuff and they don't understand the other stuff yet. And probably, like, this is sort of, I think, part of the nature of this stuff is that there is certain tendencies for that draw towards centralization, and there's people and companies and things that we do that try to counteract that. Like to say that one of these sides will win, I don't know. Maybe it's going to be the way it's right now. Like maybe this is like ongoing sort of battle of forces.
Yeah.
And if it is, maybe that's like, for me, the big value of Bitcoin is that you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Right. Not that you always have to do the most cypherpunk version of everything always, because if that's the requirement, you know, there's like pick any Bitcoin service, wallet company, and so on. I can point out a way in which they're like not perfectly cypherpunk, right? And so it becomes this like you who are without sin, you can cast the first stone. Now there's like obviously shades of this, like there's fully custodial services, so on. There's the ones that do KYC, but yeah, like I mean we all agree that like less centralization is better, right? And that's what we're all here for. So it's not under discussion. Like we're not debating that a non-custodial wallet is, all things being equal, is going to be better than a custodial, because it is. But
so what I'm thinking though is, like, say the prices of Bitcoin start going up. I'm going to be down the pub on a Friday or Saturday, and I'm going to have some friends say, "Oh, Bitcoin, I need to get into it. Yeah, how do I do it?" And my spiel is pretty simple. It's, right, okay, go and buy a ledger. Okay, once your ledger gets delivered, go on Kraken, buy some Bitcoin, send it to your wallet, and that's going to be a great first experience. Just buy $100 worth, and they're going to do it. And then they're going to come to me and they're going to say, "Oh, Pete, what's this Lightning thing? How do I do that?" And it's going to be like, "Well, you need to buy yourself a $300 node or whatever, $200 node, and then you need to get that set up. You need to connect that to an." Do you see? It's already a point. It's like, no, it's too much. So
no, that's probably not what it's going to be. Probably what it's going to be is, it's going to be a feature in the Ledger app that is going to. I'm super simplifying here, but like Lightningify, and you click on a coin and then it does things and probably connects to the. The node run by the Ledger company or something like that, and again, like there are some points of trust here, but it's still largely trustless.
But if that's a node run by the Ledger company, is that therefore a custodial service?
Well, right, and I mean, that's depending on where you draw the line. Like, you could also say that not your keys, not your Bitcoin, and then your keys, your Bitcoin, right? And if you have the keys, maybe that's enough. For example, like that's. I mean, a Ledger wallet, I'm not super familiar with it, but I'm pretty sure that it, like the Ledger app talks to a server that's run by the Ledger company. I just assume. Now, the keys are still on the hardware, right? So it is your keys, but they do provide some infrastructure like to facilitate. And I mean, this is already the status quo. Like, this is how it is. And if there is a lot of market demand for people to be more cypherpunk about it, then great. Then you know, then maybe they will add a field that, hey, you can, you know, run a wallet server on your cypherpunk device, and you can type in the IP address of your buddy in Bedford that runs one, and you connect to that, and maybe that's okay. But you know, it's a buddy, and it's not some faceless company.
Can you see what I'm getting at with this line of questioning, though? It's the level up from Bitcoin to Lightning. It's a steep learning curve. And also, it's not always as practical as Bitcoin. Now, look, I'm not saying that it shouldn't be. I'm not saying this maybe is the only way it has to be. But at the same time, it's just, these are the things I am now wrestling with and I'm thinking about in terms, because I always think of the point of the user, you know, and I always think of the point of the newest user possible. How are they going to understand this?
Yeah.
And right now, it's tough.
What I can say is, I think you're setting the bar too high.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're doing the fallacy of assuming that Lightning will solve all of the problems and that every transaction ever is, and all of the Bitcoins are going to be Lightning.
No, not that. No, I'm not doing that. Definitely not doing that. All I'm talking about is, if I've got a friend and they want to get into Bitcoin, I can get them into Bitcoin very easily. If they then start asking me about Lightning, the level up is really hard because of some of the nuances of Lightning
today.
The
way the wallets are today, but today, I mean, today the wallets all say that we are beta and you shouldn't, and it's reckless, like that's a big meme that we have, and so on. So it's also not fair. Like, is it unthinkable that your wallet is going to do a splice out and splice out on your channel for your buddy? No, not unthinkable. Just nobody built it yet, because there wasn't that big of a demand yet. When it comes, then there will be someone who will build it, and there were maybe even three, and they will try different approaches, and we'll see that one of them was better, and then the others will copy it, and it becomes a standard. So it's, you know, what if, like, there's 100 ways you could solve it. What if services, so imagine, like, so we have the Thor channel service. Imagine a world where there's 50 of those. And one of those integrated into the Ledger app, because probably you're not going to want to have your pocket Lightning coins on a Ledger for long. You probably want to have them on your phone so you can easily scan and pay. I don't know. I'm just speculating. And in that case, there's a button that says, "Hey, put this on Lightning," and you copy paste your address, and then it's, you know, copy paste the address, scan a QR code, and then you're up and running. So it's and like, some of the stuff will have some trusted parts for certain things and so on, maybe, and then someone will make a more decentralized version of it. Like, I think that this stuff will sort itself out. I'm more curious for, it's not even unthinkable. Now that we're just discussing that, what if the wallet just actually like buys a Tor channel for your buddy, and then your buddy scans the QR code and he gets it, and then suddenly he has an instantly spendable channel right away, right? And then you have exactly that already, but with Lightning. Yeah. So like, there's a lot of ways of solving it. This stuff hasn't been built yet. There's a lot of unsolved questions in Bitcoin, even in like regular Bitcoin. I mean, we're still arguing about zero confirmation replaced by fee and all that stuff. Like, it's still unsolved. Right? Different people have different views and arguments and so on. So there is a lot of stuff that needs to be worked out. I think that from the perspective of Lightning, I think that we will get to a point where a lot of it can be abstracted away and hidden. I think we're not there yet. I think we're right now at the point where it should be very easy to pop the hood, you know, so that you can quickly get feedback on what the hell went wrong. So right now we're in the pop the hood phase. And I think that it's important that it is sort of, we expose all of the inner workings a little bit and confuse people with the mess and force this learning. But eventually it will be the case that, you know, your buddy is not going to need it, but maybe you will be the expert because you were around when this stuff was built. So you will know, you know, you will probably know how to troubleshoot a Lightning channel. He won't. Maybe he will sort of, maybe there will be some button somewhere deep in his wallet that is like pop the hood and you can look at it and you're like, oh, okay, you need to do this and that. And there's the HTLC and so on.
I mean, this is why I'm talking about it, because there are a lot of complexities around Lightning, what it is now, what it means to people, what it will be in maybe 2-3 years, how some of these things may be abstracted away. And it's a really tough thing to try and balance, to judge and use it now, but also, you know, most of the issues I've run up against, it's like, oh, this will be solved in the future, so therefore trying to picture that future. And it's not even a criticism, if anything it's a criticism of myself for having the wrong expectations and treating it like a finished product.
Right.
Which is totally the wrong thing to do. And I think I've come around to that point, is that I think I understand now these are building blocks. So we've almost got the foundations in place now. A bit like when Bitcoin was command line, right? There was a time when Bitcoin was just command line. They're like, this is the building blocks. And like Nick said, the experience of buying Bitcoin with the Cash App now is way different from 2010. And I think I've come around to that point. I go, okay, I get it now. I should stop judging Lightning as a finished product. This is like the first couple of building blocks are in place. As people use it, as people start to play with it, there will be things fed back to the developers, and the developers will work on new things. What I can't do, though, and I'm not able to do, is envisage what a future Lightning network looks like and what a future relationship between the base chain and the Lightning will look like in 3-4 years, because I just don't know. And I guess nobody knows, really.
You're absolutely right that nobody knows, really. There's a pretty clear idea, I think, that that some people have. Like, there is the question of the custodial and the non-custodial and so on, that probably will be even bigger, I would guess. That issue is we can already see, if you look at the download numbers of the different wallet apps, you can kind of see that the custodial ones are far ahead in downloads, because it's easier, right? And so, like, this is the nature of all of this stuff, always people go to the easiest option out there. And this is the argument that the people who say that the easy option shouldn't be there, their argument is that if there is an easy option, people are going to use it. So let's not have the easy option. Let's force people to use the good, in air quotes, version. I think that sort of depending on how much centralization and so on and custodialship and whatnot you tolerate, you could argue that we're almost there. Like, if you use one of the custodial wallets and if you receive a $5 tip from someone and you go on Bitrefill and you buy something for $5 with it, it's a really good experience. Like, and it's not the case that this could be built with a database, blah blah. No, it's still a Lightning transaction that goes over a decentralized network. That, you know, the sending entity and the receiving don't know anything about each other, don't have any relationship, and so on. It's still pretty fucking cool. Like, but it's not the end goal. but already there, we can sort of like, we can picture it, we can feel it out, and we can start solving the UX issues. Like, if you tried out these custodial wallets, you'll see that their UX isn't perfect, right? Even though they took a whole bunch of shortcuts, right? Their UX isn't perfect, but it's a lot better than the non-custodial ones, but it's still not perfect, right? So you can still sort of like, yeah, they work from there and these work from like a lower level, and we're all building towards the same goal and the same user experience, and eventually it will get figured out. But I still think that it's, so we mentioned, for example, that Thor is a potential ISP sort of type model. If that's the case, well, okay, first of all, we're not an ISP company currently. Like, it's a little thing that we put out. It was cool to build and some people found it useful, and now we built another one of those. Yeah, but if it is the case, yeah, then these companies will be forming in some or entities or services. And there will be the central. I don't know. Like, it is tricky to know how exactly it will look, how it will all look in the end. I mean, that's part of the whole Bitcoin thing. Like, we don't know what Bitcoin looks at like in the end. Like, what does hyper-Bitcoinization look like? What does it look like when everybody in the world has access to Bitcoin somewhere from? We don't know. It's going to be strange, confusing. I can promise you that. I think it's okay. Like, I think that it works today. I think that's what I want the takeaway to be. It works today well enough so that a meaningful amount of people already today use it to pay for stuff and to get paid for things and to pay each other. I think that that's pretty damn cool. We're still super early, and there's sort of, you know, we're walking into the unknown. We can only see so far ahead. From the stuff that we see, there's a bunch of issues that we've already hit at, and there's a bunch more that we know of that are being worked on by brilliant people. There's also a bunch of issues that we don't see yet because we haven't gotten there yet. When we get there, we'll figure them out as well. But it is working already. Like, it is being used.
No, it does. And, you know, I have used it. And the times I have used it, don't get me wrong, it's been an absolute pleasure. It's amazing to be able to send something and it's instantly there. Or send somebody an invoice, they tell you they've paid you, and boom, it's there. That, to me, is absolutely amazing. And, like, I'm a big fan of it. I'm probably just a really annoying UX person, because that's what I did way back at the start of my career, and whereby I was a UX designer. So I always look at things with a critical eye.
Maybe you want to help us. Like, we'd appreciate it.
Yeah, well, yours is pretty good as it is, actually. The experience of buying in yours, honestly, was fantastic. Okay, so look, for you, with Lightning, what are the most important things that you think need to be worked on, and what are the things that you're most excited to see come to Lightning?
Oof. Well, I mean, from the technical levels, there's a lot of cool stuff, but like, the, you know, the multipath routing and that kind of stuff that will solve a lot of problems. Yeah, I think, I don't know, like, the technical stuff is kind of like, yeah, I'm mostly excited about, a little bit like you. Like, I'm excited about people trying new UI paradigms new ways of doing things. I'm more excited about integration with browsers, things like that. Like, you know, like, we can talk about Lightning improvement proposals, but you have better people to talk about those and say things. So I'm more excited about a world where there is a browser, there's a wallet in the browser, and you can just click it to receive and click it to send. Come to a website and you click the wallet and it opens the website. This is sort of a little bit what the Web3 vision is on the Ethereum side, and there is a version of that on Lightning called WebLM, which is really cool. And that stuff, like, I'm excited about that getting even easier. I'm excited for having non-custodial wallets that don't require running a full node, for example. This is controversial, I guess, these days, but I'm excited for that. Like, Zap released a version with mainnet over Neutrino to try out. So we're already at the point where you can run a Lightning wallet that is not your keys, your keys, your Bitcoin on your desktop, and it plays well with the Joule extension, and then you can sort of imagine that being iterated a couple of more steps and living inside of the browser. I think that that kind of stuff is cool. I'm excited about, I mean, I'm excited about the non-technical stuff. I'm excited about services that will let people earn money over Lightning. To a large part, that was one of the motivations for us when we built Thor, is that it's hard to receive payments for your earnings if you don't have a channel. And how are you going to get a channel if you don't have a Bitcoin? That was what the reasoning was then, at least. And now we're already like at a point, and just picture this. The way that every company has like a jobs link on their website, you can click there, you can apply for work. What if there's every company has a microtask link, and you click it, and the task shows up, and you do the task, and you get the money, and that's it. There's no login, no send your personal information. There's no nothing. Like you're being identified by your node ID, and that's enough. And you do your stuff, and like right now we have billions of people that would so eagerly hop on and do stuff, do work, you know, from micro tasks to larger tasks. And what will the world look like when any company can instantly pay, you know, $1 to 1,000 people to do a couple minutes of work? Like, what kind of things will that enable? And like, when that starts circulating. And I think I really think that we're a lot closer to that than people think. Like, I've had a couple of like meetings recently that was like, whoa, this is like, it could be the thing. Probably not yet, probably a couple of more iterations, but like could spark it. Yeah. And yeah, like people will be taking shortcuts along the way. Yeah. But it's still pretty damn cool. Like, I'm excited about that stuff. And I guess I'm also excited about the things that are sort of real. You know, there's a lot of right now we're in this, like people are building games and toys and this and that, and you can send 5 satoshis to each other, and that's cool. And it is, but I'm also excited about things that, you know, like where like money is exchanged, like money for goods or services or for whatever. You know, like when the intent is to actually transfer money and like these types of usage, I'm super excited about seeing that evolve. And whenever I get attention, I always talk about the earning and like how that could happen. And there's so many projects that we're working out right now. Yeah, I don't know if anyone's cracked it yet. I hope they will soon.
And for you guys, what's coming up for BitRefill? What should we keep an eye out on?
So, well, first and foremost, like we're constantly adding new products and countries and so on. So there's a constant flow of that, like for like a year ahead of things that you can buy with your coins. When it comes to which like I think that's super important, because like you need, in order to trust in like money, you need to know that I can buy something with it, right? And so like that's one of the motivators. When it comes to the Lightning stuff, we just released the second iteration of our Thor product, Turbo Thor, which is the one that lets you without any confirmations suddenly have a Lightning channel with money on it that you can use to buy stuff. Yeah, we have a couple of more products that are in the same category. They're like utilities that bridge the gap, you know, that bridge the gap between the old world and the new. So like backwards compatibility, like how can we make it so that you can go from Lightning to non-Lightning and vice versa in different ways? And there's quite a bit of stuff like that that's going to be coming out from our side. Working with wallets, figuring out new ways of making things work better, figuring out ways how we can integrate services like Thor into those things.
Cool. And how do people keep an eye on what you're doing? How do people keep an eye on you? Who do you want to hear from?
Ooh, you can keep an eye on BitRefill at bitrefill.com and Twitter at BitRefill. My Twitter handle is at Zigamon, Zigamon. we're always looking for good people, especially when it comes to the UX side and front end and so on. But good people that are passionate about this stuff and about, you know, doing something that is really useful for people today, now. Like, that's what we're looking for.
Brilliant. Well, listen, look, thank you for coming on. It's been great to talk to you about this. I can't wait to get this one out. I might even put this one out a day early. I think this has been a really useful interview. And yeah, thank you for coming on, Sergey.
Cool, man. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Take care, man.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay, so how was that? Did you find that interesting like I did? Where are you on the whole custodial versus non-custodial wallets? I know that Jack talked about this in a previous interview. He wasn't keen on it. He thinks it's bad. But is this against the ethos of Bitcoin? I mean, I kind of agree. But is it also perhaps a good thing? Do custodial wallets make it for a better user experience with small amounts of Bitcoin? Is it a small amount of risk that we can take or should be willing to take? Or are we setting a bad standard? I'm really kind of split. I'm on the fence. Personally, I've been playing with Blue Wallet, and the fact that it was custodial did make it easier for me to send and receive some Satoshis at one point. But is it a bad standard? I don't know. I think I would be possibly okay with small amounts, but maybe we need to be warning people. Maybe people should be aware of the risks they're taking with this. And another thing that's becoming more and more obvious as I do these Lightning interviews is that I personally need to lower my standards a bit. I've got high expectations. I'm treating it like it's a finished product. And I really need to get my head in the space that Bitcoin is essentially this perpetual beta of which Lightning is part of it. And it's always being worked on and always being improved, you know, and it does a lot. It does a lot of stuff I need already. So I think personally, I need to get a bit more patient and maybe a little less critical and just wait to see what the devs come up with. So yeah, it's a real adjustment going through this, but I also, as ever, would love your feedback. Let me know what you think. And yeah, big thank you to everyone who supports the show. It's mad, been going for like nearly 18 months now, closing down on my 100th show, got 95 now. I'm gonna have to think of doing something for my 100th show. But if you do wanna support the show, there's a whole bunch of things you can do. I'm gonna rattle through this really quickly. You can listen to the ads. The advertisers pay for me to do this, so just checking out what they do is super cool. If you don't want to listen to the ads, you can become a patron. Head over to patreon.com/whatbitcoindid. If you don't want to use Patreon, you want to subscribe by crypto, drop me an email. I'll give you a deposit address and add you to the distribution list. You can buy some merchandise. I don't make anything from the merch. I give all the money towards buying Lightning Nodes for other people. But if you want to buy some merchandise, there's a section on my website. If you want to become a sponsor, I've got a gap left for the rest of this month for Lightning. Just drop me an email. hello@whatbitcoindid.com. Looks like I'm going to crash through 200,000 downloads again this month, which is super cool. You can leave me a review on iTunes, or you can click on the subscribe button. Both help with the show. You can follow me on social media. You can check out my website, which is whatbitcoindid.com, and you can sign up to the newsletter, and you can share this out with your friends and family. Whew, through that again. I think there'll come a day where I'll stop doing that, hopefully. Anyway, thank you to everyone who supports the show. I've got loads more interesting interviews coming up this month. I'm going to be releasing a bonus non-Lightning show on Saturday. I did a follow-up interview with Andy Pag, who I previously interviewed as part of my Mt. Gox series. He just announced that he's stepping down as a coordinator for the creditors, and he's also sold his claim, so I was really interested to find out about that from him. So that's going to be released on Saturday, so you'll want to check that out. And early next week, I've got another Lightning interview with Peter Van Valkenburg from Coin Center, where we discuss how the law applies to Lightning and whether node operators should require a money transmission license. So you definitely want to check that one out. As ever, you got any questions, feel free to reach out to me. My email is hello@whatbitcoindid.com.